Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Pianist and composer Oscar Peterson has been honored by the Royal Canadian Mint with a $1 coin. The coin went into circulation on August 15th on what would have been Peterson's 97th birthday. Peterson is the first Canadian musician to appear on a circulation coin. Pianist, composer, and educator Jerry Allen has been posthumously entered into the Downbeat Hall of Fame. Allen died in 2017. In July, the National Trust for Historic Preservation, through its African American Cultural Heritage Action Fund, awarded the Louis Armstrong House Museum funding in support of a conditions assessment report and a strategic business plan. This year's recipients, quote, further demonstrates the beauty and complexity of African American life and includes historic sites tied to Black arts, culture, civic engagement, entrepreneurship, sports, medicine, education, religion, and social justice. The Montclair Jazz Festival concludes this year's events on Saturday, September 10th in Montclair, New York. Performers include the groups Artemis and the Cookers, pianist Matthew Whitaker and Monty Alexander, and singer Danielle Ponder. For more information, montclairjazzfestival.org. Continuing through September 14th, the Festival of New Trumpet Music 2022, celebrating its 10th season at various locations throughout New York City. Tonight, Thursday, September 8th, trumpeters Alexandra Ridout and Sonny Singh at the Owl Music Parlor. Upcoming artists include the David Sanford Big Band, featuring trumpeter Hugh Reagan, and trumpeters Lily Karasik and Kayon Harold. For more information, fontmusic.org. The High Zero 2022 Festival of Experimental Improvised Music is go and scheduled for September 15th through 18th in Baltimore, Maryland. Performers include reed player Samuel Burt and Jamal Moore, pianist and spoken word poetry artist Tatiana Castro, Michelle Blue playing singing bowl and rainstick, and Norman W. Long utilizing a sampler and synthesizer. For more information, highzero.org. This evening, at Roulette in New York City, 8 p.m., Dreamstruck, featuring pianist Marilyn Crispell, bassist Joe Fonda, and drummer Harvey Sorgan. Their latest release is With Grace in Mind on FSR Records. And tomorrow night, Friday, September 9th, saxophonist Vinnie Golia with Music for Large Ensemble. For more information, roulette.org. Other events happening this evening, Thursday, September 8th. At Elastic in Chicago, Illinois, the Improvised Music Series presents alto saxophonist Sarah Clausen at 8:30 p.m. CST, and alto saxophonist Fred Jackson Jr., pianist and synthesizer player Paul Giolorenzo, and drummer K.G. Price, 9:30 p.m. CST. For more information, elasticarts.org. Guitarist Bill Frizzell begins a four-night residency at Freight and Salvage in Berkeley, California, with trumpeter Ambrose Akinmusiri, 8 p.m. PST. For more information, thefreight.org. And at Culture Lab in Long Island City, 7 p.m., trombonist and composer John Yeo and his 17-piece band perform a free concert. For more information, johnyeo.com. At Constellation in Chicago, Illinois, tomorrow night, the Jason Roepke Quartet. For more information, constellation-chicago.com. The Levin Brothers, keyboardist Pete and bassist Tony, are on tour and will be at the Somerset Room in Sarnia, Ontario, tomorrow night, September 9th. The Token Lounge in Detroit, Michigan, on Saturday, September 10th. And the Metronome Brewery in St. Paul, Minnesota, on Tuesday, September 13th. For more information, thelevinbrothers.com. Elysium Furnace Works presents guitarist Joe Morris and saxophonist Ken Vandermark inside the VBI Theater of the Kenneen Hackett Arts Center in Poughkeepsie, New York, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. For more information, visit Elysium Furnace Works on Facebook. On Saturday, September 10th, percussionist Adam Rudolph's Go Organic Orchestra performs as part of Summer Stage 4 in Central Park, Manhattan, New York, 7 p.m. For more information, cityparksfoundations.org. Upcoming shows at the Jazz Gallery in New York City. On Saturday, September 10th, Anna Weber's Simple Trio. And on Tuesday, September 13th, trumpeter Kayon Harold. For more information, jazzgallery.org. Vocalist Terry Rozier's Piano Trio performs at Gateways Inn in Lenox, Massachusetts on Saturday, September 10th, 6 p.m. For more information, gatewaysinn.com. Jazz is Sunday at the Falcon in Marlboro, New York on September 11th. Vocalist Theo Bleckman and the duo Endless Field. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. And violinist Jason Kuei Huang and his trio will be part of Arts for Arts in the Parks on Sunday, September 11th, 2:30 p.m. at the First Street Green Art Park in Manhattan. For more information, jasonkuehuang.com. And now for new releases. Coming out soon, bassist Alex Fournier's Six-ish Plateaus on Elastic Recordings. Pianist Stephen Feifke and trumpeter Bijan Watson's Generation Gap Jazz Orchestra on Cellar Music Group. Saxophonist Chet Dokas's Rich in Cymbals 2 on Just in Time. And bassist Henry Franklin and producers and instrumentalists Ali Shahid Muhammad and Adrian Young's Henry Franklin's JID 14 on Jazz is Dead. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guests are journalists and reviewers, both of whom write for the Free Jazz Collective. Nick Ostrom, who also contributes to the online music review magazine, The Squid's Ear, and Fotis Nikolakopoulos, who also works as a tutor in math and physics and as a translator. Thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, certainly.
So first off, holy smoke. I have a ton of new releases that have flooded my library in the last couple of months. What are some of the new releases that you're both looking forward to reviewing soon? Why don't we start with Nick?
Oh, so yeah, I've fallen behind. So I have a long list of things that are ready to go out the door and, or will be in a couple of soon. But I'm working on a piece on a few of Stephen Gauci's COVID sessions, which are, he's just, I don't know how many he produced, but he's been doing a lot. And then after the break in the COVID quarantines, he traveled to Europe. There's one with Alexander von Schlickenbach that I'm working on in that series. So that's really exciting. I have one by New Monuments, the New Monuments release, Language is the Skin, which has Don Dietrich from Burbedo Magus, and him. It's him and Ben Hall's project, and that's really an ear-splitting one. That's really a powerful one. I'm looking forward to getting that out the door, and I'm also working on a longer piece on some work by Lance Austin Olsen, who's a Canadian composer, and he does a lot of kind of sound collaging, you know, soundscaping, that sort of thing. And I've been in some contact with him, but I've been listening to him for years now. And I mean, those are a few of the things on the top of my list. Yeah, it's an exciting period. I mean, there's too much. There's, which is a good thing, I guess.
But. I think so. Fotis.
To be honest, Cyril, I don't have an exact plan. I'm still trying to get by from at least the Greek summer, which is always hot and not my best part of the year. My plan is always to bring out, I mean in the blog, to bring out some stuff that are interesting and are not part probably of what goes on in the States or in England or in Western Europe. So right now I'm still trying to finish a small piece. I usually write small pieces. This is how I write. I don't think that anyone is really interested in to read something that is really big. So my pieces are always small, maybe a bit more spontaneous. Mm-hmm. I find it hard for me to read something that's above 500 words. So this is what I try to do when I'm also a writer and not a reader. Anyway, I'm trying to present right now some music from Slovenia, from a percussionist that I really like his work. Even though my last review of the work from him wasn't such a good review. But anyway, his name is Jaka Berger, and now he has a duo which is it's mostly free jazz and not so much composed stuff. I'm also a fan of another percussionist, which is American, by the way. His name is Matt Weston, and I want to present some stuff from him. I feel like I have a feeling for people who are in the margins or in the peripheries of geography or anything like that, because I'm also in the periphery. So Matt Weston is something like that, at least for me. So I'm working on those two pieces mostly right now.
Okay. I'll assume that most of the music submissions you receive are digital.
Definitely. Yes?
Yeah. As a reviewer, do you have a preference in how you receive submissions? Back to Nick.
Yeah, that's a great question. I hate to say it depends, but it really does depend. It's the, you know, digital files are so practical, and at Free Jazz Blog, there's just most comes through that, and there's a massive list that that Paul and Stefan keep that just has the MP3 files from which we choose some things and they send them out. So most of what I review for Free Jazz Blog, I get through that. Sometimes if I have been in conversation with somebody, or there's an artist I really like that just came out with something, if I pick something up at a concert or something, I do take from outside of that database too. You know, honestly, I will say I'm still a materialist. I know it's wasteful in ways, but I prefer the album, you know, I prefer, or the CD, I prefer the cover. You know, I prefer to have that hard copy so I can listen to it in my car. But MP3s are so much more practical, and I rarely request anything like that, just because I feel, you know, these artists who are getting no money anyway, or these labels that are getting no money anyway, I feel uneasy asking them to, you know, send a physical product and,
right,
you know, pay for shipping and all of that. Right. And sometimes I will, but I, you know, there is that dis-ease there. So I MP3s are fine.
Yeah. See, as a radio programmer, I have to say about somewhere between 90 to 95% of what I receive these days is digital. And I'm totally fine with that. You know, you get all the attachments, that one sheet with the information, some photos that I'll sometimes post on Facebook, you know, to go along with my preview of an upcoming show. So,
yeah, and that stuff's really important, because a lot of the stuff I review, I don't, Fotis, I have noticed before he even said that, he does a lot of things that I've just never heard of, these projects. You do a lot of Eastern European reviews. I think it's wonderful, but I do some things that I do a lot on artists I have no idea about. So those sheets, those press sheets,
yeah,
And the liner notes are very important because otherwise I have no idea what's going on, who these musicians are, or sometimes what these sounds I'm hearing are coming from. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah. And Fotis, your preference for submissions?
Obviously, I really agree with Nick. Most of the stuff is digital. As for myself, I really try to find a balance because I am also an avid listener of music. I'm also a fan of many musicians and many musics. So at the same time, I don't want to ask for anything, to be honest. Usually it's either digital or something that I bought and I heard before, or I really use Bandcamp a lot. I hate Spotify. I never use Spotify, which is really bad for the artists also. So I try to find a balance between listening to something that as a listener would like to hear or maybe at the next level buy and present it. And at the same time, not to ask from musicians to send stuff because of the reasons that Nick already mentioned. Mm-hmm. We know that even in the 21st century, the music that this site is interested in is still marginalized. Most of the artists don't get any money from it or are usually get rarely money. So I try not to ask for anything. Of course, there's always the question about not having strings attached with someone, not presenting friends, blah, 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 which is always a case sensitive. It's like who you're going to present and why and all the stuff. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like I still try to be a listener who also wants to present some stuff and nothing more than that.
And Fotis, that leads into the burning question from artists. How do I catch a reviewer's gaze? I get a digital download. That's one thing. But when you get a hard copy and you see it, does that make a difference to you?
No, totally no. Because I don't know if Nick has another opinion. I don't ask for anything. If someone wants to send me something, which is like not very usual for me because I live in Greece, it's not the same. Okay, I really welcome it. I email people. I say thank you. I have even started some friendships this way. But for me, it's nothing more than that. I never ask, so I have no obligations to do anything. Of course, when someone sends me something and I really like it, well, that's, the best situation it can be.
Yeah. And Nick, how do we catch your eye?
But I think I'm a little less disciplined than Fotis is on this. I was just thinking after what I told you a minute ago, I requested something recently from Out of Your Head Records, a new release that's coming out, which looks really interesting. And I...
Oh, by who? I probably have it already.
Oh, let me... Give me one second. I'll bring it up here. Yeah, it's by Molly
Obosavin.
Yes. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, Sweet Tooth. It's really an incredible album. And I honestly wanted to listen to it in my car. I know I'm in contact with the people who run that label. And I know they have press release, press copies that they do send out sometimes. Yeah. So I do ask, sometimes I want the physical copy, but... I mean, it's difficult. On the one hand, some people who have emailed me, I've really taken to their music, and I, like Fotis, I've made some acquaintances or some friends with some musicians who I really like what they do, and they have interesting things to say. On the other hand, I have gotten some kind of solicitations that, you're always kind of gambling if someone's less interested in it. Then, we don't want our inboxes full of hundreds and hundreds of releases that we just, I'm sure that's what you get, Cheryl, but that you can't look at. I mean, it's difficult. I don't know good advice. I mean, I'd say send it to Free Jazz Blog. Hope your band name has a catchy title or a good, hope the stars align so that a reviewer says, I never heard of that before, but I really need to listen to it.
Yeah.
I'd say, go for that. Go for something eye-catching or, I don't know. I'm not a musician myself. I don't know how to really distinguish yourself in this environment of excess, but
yeah,
however you can do it,
Yeah. I think any artist who's listening right now is trying to figure that out. What is my in with reviewers and programmers? Gentlemen, in writing and reviewing for the Free Jazz Collective, are you given the choice of accepting and rejecting submissions, be it music or books or videos?
Completely.
Actually, sorry, Nick. I think it's vice versa. It's vice versa. We choose.
You choose. Okay. In having that choice, does it become a burden to choose what to review at times?
No, for me, it's never a burden. For me, it's always a pleasure because it's like sharing, it's like communicating and connecting, especially for someone who's not like in the States or again in Western Europe. I'm sorry that I keep repeating that stuff, but you know, unfortunately, geography it's still a big question and it's still important. For me, it's about sharing, and I always, and it's not a narcissistic thing, I always go to the comment of anything I write to see what has been written about, who says what, if they like it, if people like it or say, and I'm really pleased when someone says, okay, I disagree. For me, it's about communicating, connecting, and suggesting also. I've been a listener of music for 25 years, and it's always about suggestions. Someone tells you, okay, listen to that, or oh, this guy is very good, or blah, blah, you know. So I'm really pleased about it. It's always a happy situation for me.
Nick, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always excited when I get to make my next choices. You know, I do try to put some thought into spreading out what I listen to and what I write about, especially just because otherwise it can get quite boring. You know, describing the same music over and over again and running out of onomatopoeic adjectives and nouns. And, you know, so I try to listen widely and so I don't get bored with it, and hopefully readers don't get as bored with it. I do try to hop around the world a little bit and try to review musicians I've never heard of before. To an extent, I do some that I like and I know I'm going to like their music, or I assume I will. But that also keeps things interesting. You know, it can be a chore to review sometimes, especially because all of us have jobs and other lives and things too. So sometimes my pile's higher than I would like it to be. But in terms of making the choices, you know, it's always exciting. There's always something new out there too, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. All right, a little bit about you too. Nick, you are in New Orleans, Louisiana. You also contribute to the site, The Squid's Ear.
Yes.
And Fotis, you are in Athens, Greece. You work as a tutor. Is it in math and physics?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And you're also a translator.
Yes, I'm also a translator. Mm-hmm. I try to bring, basically, it's not that glamorous, but I try to bring some stuff, because the Greek bibliography in music is very limited. So I'm really trying to translate some books or some works in English to Greek, which is also a very hard thing to do because Greece is a small country, the market is very small, and there's no money about it.
What both of you do in your jobs is communicate. I find that those who do not communicate well do not sell. Meaning, in the age of analytics, their stuff doesn't get read very often, leading to less assignments, leading to less pay. In knowing the kinds of reviews that draw eyeballs to your work, do you continue to communicate to the same audiences, or do you decide after you've evaluated a work that you usually don't get or review, that you're going to reach out to a new audience? Analytics be damned.
Oh, well, that's a great question. In the rest of my life, I teach at the college level. I'm a historian. So that question is a big question that we as people who produce knowledge and writing constantly contend with, right? What the audience you're writing for is, and how much of that you want to take into consideration when you're, I don't want to get too idealistic, but when the purpose is to write something that is you know, that is cogent and compelling, and that pulls together all these forms of knowledge, and that is new. With Free Jazz Blog and with Squid's Ear, for me, that's a break. It's a very different type of writing, and I really like how both of those sites really give me the freedom. I do try to stylistically fit into the different styles that, you know, each blog has kind of an identity. But I honestly, I think I don't really think about that analytical side of it. I don't think of the analytics. I think of the audience as kind of myself. What would I like to read? What would I be interested in? Fotis makes a great point of how much attention can I devote to a longer piece. Yeah. But I think just putting it up there and hoping the readers come. I've talked to Paul about a little bit about numbers and
Paul really, is the
Paul Accaro, who's he and Steph are really run the site from behind the scenes. There's no editor, but to the extent that there's an editor, that's them. I do my best. Try to get, you know, work that I find interesting out there, and of course draw attention to work that I find interesting. And I think that the blogs are niche enough that you're going to get the readers that you'll get enough readers that are interested in what you're doing too, because those are the people who are going to be clicking anyway at the very beginning.
Yes. And Fotis.
Most of it I agree with Nick. For me, writing and reading and listening to music many times is something really personal. So on a basic level, I'll try to speak my truth and nothing more than that. If I like it, I say it. If I don't like it, I say it. It's that simple. So to be honest, especially for someone like me who is not very good with technology, I don't care about analytics. I really want to write what I feel about something. And if that's important even to one person, I'm fine with it. Really, nothing more than that. I don't get much, you know, I wouldn't say I don't care, because if you write something or you play something, you really care about how someone else feels about it. But it's like, I never think about audiences or to write something different or whatever. I try to speak my truth and nothing more than that.
Amen. All right, gentlemen, as we come to the end of this interview, I want to give you the last word. Is there a question I haven't asked you? Is there something you want to say to this audience? Fotis, why don't you start? What do you got to say?
Nothing more than when it comes to music, because actually music is what brings us together right now, is that we should try to get out from our comfort zones and try to listen to more improvisational music, whatever that is, because improvisation is a practice and not just a general style. So we should be more adventurous in when listening to music, take more risks maybe, and always support the artists, especially now.
And Mr. Nick.
Yeah, I completely agree with Fotis. That was very well put. I'd also say, especially as things are reopening now and acts are coming through, listen locally. I mean, go out to shows. Yeah. Wherever you live, you have incredible, very creative musicians there that need your support and just kind of need to be discovered by you. I really do think that's true. Something I've grappled with, having lived in some wonderful free jazz cities, New York and Chicago and Berlin. You know, wherever you live, you're going to be able to find that. And those people really need you to find them. So, you know, start digging locally. And, you know, as Fotis said, you know, at the beginning, look on the fringes, look in places where you don't expect to find music that you'd like, and you will find it, and you'll be challenged by it too.
My interview with journalists and reviewers Nick Ostrom and Fotis Nicolakopoulos. To contact Fotis, you can at Twitter, at CulturAnafigo. For more information about the Free Jazz Collective, freejazzblog.org. And now for some music. That was the tune Igual Monte from San Francisco Bay Area guitarist George Katsirilos and his quartet from their OA2 release from earlier this year, Refuge, the follow-up to his 2018 album Mostly in Blue. Keith Saunders on piano, Rob Fisher on bass, and Ron Marabuto on drums. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. For more information about the show, jazzfluxus.com. My interview is with vocalist, composer, lyricist, and CEO of Brontosaurus Records, Lauren Henderson. Her new release is titled La Bruja on her record label. First of all, I want to thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. We're speaking to each other less than a week before you begin your European tour. You're a world traveler, having toured parts of Europe, South America, and Africa. What are your expectations for this tour?
You know, that's a great question. And speaking about expectations, I've really been thinking about them in general and all of my relationships. And of course, there is an expectation that the band has reviewed the music and maybe had a chance to listen online, whatever streaming platforms they're using. And we've discussed the repertoire, but my only expectation of my band members, so who I'm so fortunate to travel with, is that they are in the moment and that we try our best to connect and give a message to the audience, because to me, that's my number one job. I can't always sing perfectly every day. I could get sick, anything could come up, but I can sing from the heart, and that's important for all of us to be centered in that way. Mm.
In performing in front of an audience where the majority may not speak Spanish, like Norwegians, Right. Do you consciously or unconsciously perform in a different yet nuanced manner to penetrate the language barrier?
That's a fantastic question as well. Absolutely. I try to keep in mind, and maybe because I have so many friends who are bilingual, or English may not be their first language, or Spanish may not be their first language, I try to enunciate clearly to make sure that everything goes through. And of course, depending on what's going on, I'm not a stand-up comedian, but I love interacting with the audience. So I've learned from trial and error what jokes translate through and which ones do not. And I try to just connect with the audience, maybe bring up something fun that we experienced before the show, and, you know, thank them for opening me to their home.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about your new release, La Bruja, which is the Spanish word for witch.
Right.
You sing about the history of women and Black Americans being persecuted in this country. Correct. And the Salem witch trials that took place in Salem, Massachusetts, where you grew up near.
Yes, exactly.
Would you please describe the similarities in each of their histories that have resonated with you?
Absolutely. La bruja for me was a way of reclaiming this word that often has a negative connotation and using it to empower, because I believe that as women, as Black women, as women of color, we have magic, and sometimes that can intimidate people through time, but we have to continue to be strong and shine and show our magic.
Yes, yes, yes.
Exactly. And that's really what this whole album is about. A lot of the composers are incredible Afro-Latina women throughout history.
Including yourself. You wrote 4 tunes for this release.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I did. And it was a really cathartic experience actually writing. And as I delve deeper, I go home frequently to visit my family as an only child. I like to go home and see my parents and make sure they're doing okay. And I think of all of the history we learned about these women who were persecuted for doing nothing but being strong at the end of the day. And that's what it boils down to. So I really wanted to revisit this theme and encourage all of us to stand up and shine as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. You've released 9 albums on your label Brontosaurus Records. Are we talking like Fred Flintstone Brontosaurus Burgers, or? I mean, that's the first thing I think of when I, every time I read that.
So a little fun fact about me is that I've always loved dinosaurs. I'm a little dinosaur nerd, and I'm also a vegetarian, although it's been... I've been tempted recently, especially as I travel throughout the world and see all the beautiful cuisine, but I've been a vegetarian for quite some time now, and the Brontosaurus was a vegetarian as well. And I'm an old soul, of course. I love jazz and classical, which one of our artists kind of dips in and out. So I'm just happy to support the artists that I can. It is mostly my music on the label, which is fine, and nepotism at its best. But I definitely want to lift up other artists. What's really important to me as a label is just making sure that I have enough time to devote to that artist, because I don't think it's fair to take their time if you can't really give 110%. And so I keep it small. I keep the roster small whenever I can.
Would you mention some of the artists on your roster?
Yes, I have a wonderful pianist, Lucille Dandridge, and she has a record out now called Journeying, which is out on Brontosaurus Records, and you can find it on all streaming platforms. And then Nora Fox is a quadruple threat. She's a wonderful actress, singer, dancer, writer, and she has some work that's coming out. So as soon as I get back from Europe, I'm going to project manage with her, and we're going to get that release out very soon.
Alma en soledad fría, congelada, acércate, calienta tu corazón. Alma sólida, fría, congelada, acércate, calienta tu corazón. No te alejes de la llama, abraza el calor. Alma sólida, fría, congelada, acércate, calienta tu corazón.
Nine releases that you've put out, 4 of them were engineered or co-engineered by Daniel Sanant at Flux Studios in, is it the Lower East Side? Lower East Side.
Exactly.
Right around the corner from Katz's Deli. I know you're a vegetarian, but...
They have wonderful sandwiches.
They do. And the French fries. Okay.
Yes. I will confess that I've tried one of their delicious sandwiches before my times of being a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And they have an excellent egg salad sandwich, which you can get as well.
And the matzo ball soup and the knishes.
Right? Exactly. Now I'm hungry.
So those four albums, Alma Obscura from 2019, The Songbook Session from 2020, Musa from 2021, and now La Bruja of this year. From the beginning of your association to now, what does Daniel Sinnott continue to bring out in your recordings?
Oh, that's so important. He is, besides being now one of my very best friends and really like family to me, mi hermano, he actually, which it's not written on the liner notes, I believe, online, but on the hard copy of my very first record, Daniel was the first person to engineer my record. So before I was doing music full time, I was working for MTV Networks. And we worked with studios around the area with voiceover artists. So I had heard wonderful things about Flux. So when I knew that I wanted to release my debut record, I called them up and I was paired with Daniel, and he really hooked me up. I felt at ease. And one added bonus is he's from Colombia, which is right next to Panama. And he, although I'm fluent in Spanish, I always like to have another person to double check my lyrics or just make sure that they're coming through the way that I want them to, that my pronunciation is on point. And it's nice to just have somebody to double check you. And he very naturally fell into that role besides being a fantastic engineer and mixing engineer. And we had a lot of success with that first record. It was seamless. Sullivan Fortner was there, and you know, the three of us have been working together for years at this point. And so for my following records, at the time, the studio couldn't accommodate a larger ensemble, but now they can. So I ended up coming back to him. And each record, we've grown. And I think together, we've sort of developed the sound and the message and the feel that we want, the balance of the instruments, which is really important for my voice, which kind of is low and soft. So I need to be pushed forward. And he does all of these things to enhance the music and really understands the message that I'm going for. So to be honest, I would say he and Sullivan have been really pillars of my development and evolution as an artist, especially as a recording artist.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. You've studied at a number of institutions for music, performance, and business. Brown University in Rhode Island, the IE Business School in Spain, and Wheaton College in Illinois.
Massachusetts, I'm sorry.
Oh, Wheaton College is, there are two, aren't there?
Yes, there are two.
Okay, that's right.
I'm so sorry to interject, but I will say that because it's a common, and they have different identities, very different identities. So I like to clarify.
No, you should. So that's Wheaton College, Massachusetts. Got right. It. When did you decide it was pragmatic to understand the business side of music and the arts?
Absolutely. That's a fantastic question. When I started singing on the side, as I mentioned before, I was working at MTV and I was on the production side, and I learned a lot about artist management, which was really helpful. So when I kind of transitioned into doing music full time, a lot of my friends who hadn't had some of the same courses, I mean, they also helped me in other ways because I don't have a conservatory background. I studied music, of course, and theory, but I don't have an extensive conservatory education. But I do know a bit about business and I've had a lot of management experience. So I would help my friends on the side and do little things for them. And then when more and more people would ask me to help them with their websites or setting up their Facebook page or making an Instagram account. And these are things a while back now, I think people are very self-sufficient with all of these, all of these things. But I did help some of my dear friends get that going and organize it and do a lot of the project management for your online presence. So I thought, you know, I can lean in a bit more to this and really develop as an entrepreneur. And at this time, especially once I graduated from Wheaton, I had been working as a professional musician for a while and toured. I thought it would be wonderful as a recording artist to have my own label, because going back and forth with different labels and, you know, negotiating over your intellectual property, which is basically like our 401k as musicians, I thought it was imperative for me to own as much of it as I possibly could. So I really wanted to go ahead and make sure that I could find a way to protect myself. It's also another way of being budget friendly, because of course it's expensive and a cost, a worthwhile cost, but you have to hire different people to help you manage your company. So I'm glad that I did go to school for business and I learned so much from my colleagues, which was the most beneficial part, I think, because we all have different career paths and we're in different industries. And learning from different industries was surprisingly beneficial in ways that I couldn't even imagine.
So, Lauren, as we come to the end of this interview, I want to give you the last word. If there is a question I didn't ask, if there is something you'd like to tell us about your upcoming tour or an upcoming project.
Absolutely. Well, again, I'm so honored to speak with you. Thank you so much for having me on this incredible program. And I'm so excited to share my message and hear yours as well, because that's so important and we connect in this way. And I'm thrilled to be heading to Europe again. This will be my fifth time heading there this year. So I am no stranger to the continent. I'm so grateful to collaborate with all of the incredible musicians that you hear on these recordings. And so much thanks to Groove Marketing, who I've been working with for years, because it kind of comes full circle. But at the top of the year, I started working with Green Door Artist Management, which is wonderful. And having a manager now and other people to support you, especially as you leave the country and tour around, is just invaluable. And I'm so grateful to be collaborating with them and starting this new chapter. And of course, continuing Brontosaurus and my life as a recording artist and performer. So thank you so much for having me, and stay tuned for part two, which is an answer to La Bruja, and it's called Conjuring, which features some of the same songs, the same concept, but mostly in English with a couple songs in Spanish.
Oh, and when did you say that was coming out?
That is coming out in the spring of 2023.
My interview with Lauren Henderson. Music heard was from Ms. Henderson's latest release, La Bruja, on Brontosaurus Records. For more information, laurenhendersonmusic.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced for and airing on WGXC 90.7 FM, a listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WGXC. WGXC.org. For more information about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or jazzfluxus.com. Thank you.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.